continue to take seriously the climate change, not the cause of it, but the things that we observe.
The Obama Clean Power Plan gets the axe. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Senator Dan Sullivan talks to Juneau business leaders about tax plans and a desire for a more orderly administration.
I've tried to encourage the White House to stay focused, disciplined, and credible.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The Trump administration today began its move to drop President Obama's Clean Power Plan. The regulation didn't apply to Alaska, but its goal was to curb climate change, and Alaska certainly has a stake in that. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin looks at how the Trump administration talks about climate change and what it means for Alaska.
When asked about climate change, the nominees for senior posts at the Departments of Interior and Energy have very similar answers. The climate is changing and humans play a role, but how big a role, they just can't say.
Mr. Walker, do you believe that human activity accounts for the majority of climate change since the Industrial Revolution?
Here's Bruce Walker, now Assistant Energy Secretary, responding to Senator Al Franken at a confirmation hearing last month.
I think there is a contribution from man. I couldn't quantify exactly what that is.
And here's Douglas Dominic, an Assistant Secretary at Interior.
I do agree that the climate is changing and that man has a role.
Their written responses were even more uniform. Susan Combs, an Interior Department nominee. I believe that the climate is changing and that man has an influence. Brenda Berman, another Interior nominee. I believe that climate change is not a hoax and that man has an influence. Joe Balash, an Alaskan nominee for Interior. I believe climate is not a hoax and that man has an influence. Over and over, the nominees acknowledge humans have an influence or some impact on climate. But they won't go as far as American science organizations, which have for years said human activity is the primary driver. Some Trump appointees do acknowledge sea level rise is damaging coastal communities. White House Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert says the administration is committed to dealing with the effects of climate change, just not the causes.
Right now, I will tell you that we continue to take seriously the climate change, not the cause of it, but the things that we observe.
David Hayes was Deputy Interior Secretary in the Obama and Clinton administrations. He says the uniform responses of Trump nominees suggest senior staff will not be free to make decisions based on science.
That signals to me that they're not going to have the discretion, the wherewithal, the air cover to bring the resources to the table to help those Alaskans that are rightly very concerned about what's happening to their coastline, to their fire risk, to their wildlife, et cetera. And that's just not right.
President Obama made climate change a major emphasis of his second term. For evidence, he repeatedly pointed to coastal erosion in Alaska villages. But the boost in high-level attention on rural Alaska was not paired with a lot of funding to meet the need. And now, the White House attention is gone, too. President Trump has called climate change a hoax and has announced he will pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He shows no sign of making climate change a priority.
Let's be clear about a couple things. The public doesn't care that much about global warming.
Frank Masano is a communications specialist at the Washington Policy Shop of the law firm Bracewell, where his clients include big energy companies. He says when Republican politicians and nominees say man has some impact on climate, they may mean a range of things. He says nominees have assistants to help keep their written answers in line with the administration, which explains the uniformity. Maisano says many lower 48 Republicans just don't have that much experience with the question.
Because this just isn't that big of a priority issue for them. And they see it as not that big of a priority issue because the politics surrounding it hasn't been a priority issue for their supporters.
Maisano says Alaska leaders seeking government help for the effects of climate change should make their most compelling case. But he points out Republicans and Democrats like infrastructure.
I think certainly the climate change case is going to be less. It's going to be less well received in this administration because this administration is different than the previous administration in terms of where they stand on it. And there's no one should be surprised by that.
Despite the rhetoric, there hasn't been a complete about face on the ground. State of Alaska employee Sally Russell Cox works on village relocation. She says so far, the same federal agencies are still cooperating with her.
I don't want to jinx any of it because, you know, maybe it's that it hasn't come to somebody's attention. I don't know.
That could change. The Trump administration is not fully staffed yet. At Interior, only 3 presidential appointees had been sworn in by early October, out of 17 positions requiring Senate confirmation. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The state of Alaska has received a 3-month reprieve from national proof of identity standards as it works to comply with the law. The Alaska Department of Administration says it has received a grace period from enforcement of the federal Real ID Act until January 22nd. The department, in a release, says the state has sought an additional grace period until October 2020. That is when it says all Alaskans will need a Real ID compliant card or other acceptable form of federal identification for domestic air travel. Alaska's Division of Motor Vehicles plans to begin producing Real ID compliant driver's licenses in January 2019. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan says his top priorities for changes to federal tax law are making sure they're good for Alaska and that they promote economic growth. But he also says he'll consider the size of the national debt. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what Sullivan told business leaders yesterday in Juneau.
Sullivan met 8 Juneau business leaders as part of a swing through Southeast Alaska this week. He sought their input as he prepares for the Senate debate this fall over changes to federal tax laws. Sullivan says he's optimistic about how President Donald Trump's administration's policies and appointments will affect the economy. Along with the tax changes, Sullivan is hopeful about infrastructure, permitting, and energy policies. But he says Trump doesn't always help himself. Sullivan responded to a reporter's question that referenced Trump's latest quarrel with Senator Bob Corker, a Tennessee Republican.
The president's insults or tweets that are not helpful, and, you know, I've tried to encourage the White House to stay focused, disciplined, and credible. If we're going to get tax reform done, if we're going to grow the economy, you know, going after Bob Corker, who's a good senator, it's just not helpful.
Congress and the administration are considering a framework for tax changes that include lower corporate taxes and fewer deductions.
Unlike healthcare, where a lot of the issues are very partisan, a lot of the policies that have been introduced in this framework are bipartisan or should be bipartisan.
Sullivan says he'll consider the effect of tax changes on the national debt.
We're going back now up to deficits of $1 trillion a year. So in the last 10 years, we've doubled our national debt. So I worry about it a lot.
But Sullivan says the changes' effect on growth will be most important. He pointed to the 1960s and 1980s as decades when tax cuts occurred before fast growth in the economy.
One of the most important things when you look at the debt and the deficit, you know, from my perspective, there's a lot that you can do to address it. But the most important way to address it, by far, is to be able to grow out of it.
Sullivan would like to see tax reform reduce the number of deductions and other loopholes, but he says it will be a challenge.
you know, everybody's saying, oh, the health care was really hard. Tax reform is going to be real easy. And I don't believe that, right? I think it's not going to be easy.
The business leaders who met with Sullivan came from different backgrounds. Rick Shattuck is an owner of Shattuck & Grumman Insurance. He expressed concern over whether the tax changes would affect all businesses equally. The framework includes a top individual tax rate of 35%, a rate for some businesses owned by individuals and partnerships of 25%, and a corporate rate of 20%.
Well, I think anytime the rates are going down, that's good, but I question why the tax code should pick winners and losers.
Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation CEO Angela Rodell says she'll be watching how other countries react to changes the U.S. makes. For example, if Congress closes loopholes that benefit foreign investors, other countries could react by closing their loopholes that benefit the permanent fund. Sullivan will also visit Sitka and Ketchikan this week. In addition, he met with Alaska Airline executives in Seattle during the trip. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Vietnam veteran reflects on his service.
The whole country is communist, so we didn't stop that. I lost a lot of good friends over there, and it just didn't gain anything.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
A 4-year-old Anchorage boy was killed when he was struck by a sport utility vehicle backing out of a parking space. Anchorage police say Carlito Allen Ramos died yesterday afternoon. Police, shortly before 3 p.m., received a report of a child who had run behind an SUV and was struck. The woman driving stopped and called for help. The boy's father ran out, and both adults transported the boy to a medical facility where he was pronounced dead. No charges have been filed in the case. Police say Carlito was the youngest of 4 children in the family. The state and the National Park Service are teaming up to improve safety on the park's highway near the entrance to Denali. Alaska Department of Transportation Project Engineering Manager Carl Heim says the area around milepost 231, where the highway crosses a bridge over the Nenana River, is a popular place with park visitors walking to trails on the other side.
There's a large amount of pedestrians that walk up on the road onto the bridge.
Heim says the state plans to rebuild the bridge with an attached sidewalk.
We're basically building one bridge and we're just going to separate the traffic from the pedestrians.
Another part of the project will use a different means to separate people crossing the highway from vehicle traffic.
We're going to put a tunnel under the road.
The National Park Service is proposing to build new visitor amenities along the same stretch of the park's highway. Denali National Park outdoor recreation planner Molly McKinley says the plan calls for a highway wayside on 2.5 acres of park land.
That would have parking as well as trailheads and restroom facilities. And then there would be connector trails that leave the wayside and tie into existing area trails.
The $2 million wayside will be paid for by the Park Service. The state's road, bridge, and tunnel work are estimated to cost $26 million. An environmental assessment for the combined project is available for review and public comment. The DOT's Heim anticipates construction will occur in either 2019 or 2020. The PBS documentary series on the Vietnam War by Ken Burns takes a look at a conflict fought decades ago that lives on for many veterans to this day. We're taking a look at the experiences of Alaskans who were involved in the war. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes has the story of one veteran who, years after service, made the long journey back to Vietnam.
Before he deployed, before grisly assignments handling napalm, Rex Close met a girl who lived 12 miles away in a small town in Ohio.
I found the love of my life I was still in high school, I think probably 1959, 1960, at a party and dated a while. And in 1963, we were married.
This audio is from an archived interview Close did with the Alaska Veterans Museum. The couple didn't have any kids in their first years of marriage, which made Close eligible for the draft.
I got the little message from Uncle Sam that said, "Greetings, Christmas Eve, 1965. And I'd had enough time on the dirt, so I knew I didn't want to go into the Army, and Air Force was my choice.
At 25, Close was older than most of his peers in basic training, and even one of his commanders when he was in Colorado getting technical training on handling munitions.
You know, I was the old man the whole time in basic training, either old man or grandpa.
Once his deployment started, Close rotated into Vietnam for long stints, punctuated by a few days' rest at Fort Clark in the Philippines. He was gone for almost 2 years and only spoke to his wife on the phone twice. They communicated mostly through letters and small cassette tapes. In the interview, Close doesn't talk much about what happened during his combat deployment. Because of his age, he was often a counselor for young men in his unit, but being older also meant Close was sometimes tapped for gruesome assignments, like going into combat zones after a firefight.
Assigned to mortuary affairs, and that's tough. It was an eye-opener for a country boy from Ohio. Wasn't prepared for a lot of that.
By the time Close returned home, the anti-war movement was raging across America, including the college campus where Close had once been enrolled, Kent State. After Vietnam, in his own words, Close came back not a hero, but a rogue.
Got spit on, red paint thrown on us when we landed in California. I remember that. I remember my mother telling me at one time, I think it was the last letter she wrote to me, she said, "Don't expect any hugs until you get to Cleveland Airport." She was dead on.
Close and his wife spent the next 3 years stationed at Air Force Base Elmendorf in Anchorage before he separated from the service. But he spent his career working on base. The couple retired in 2000 to a log house they'd spent decades building in the Glacier View area just beyond Sutton. And a few Christmases ago, their son asked Close if he wanted to go back to Vietnam. Decades after the American military left, veterans were returning to look for closure. At first, Close wasn't sure.
So I thought about it and thought about it. I talked to some of my Vietnam brothers, and as I finally figured out, about half of them wished that they hadn't gone back, and the other half said it was probably the best thing that they ever did.
He decided to go. Close met up with his son in Thailand, and the two toured Southeast Asia for weeks. On their first night in Hanoi, Close says the smells, the traffic, and the omnipresent buzz of activity took him right back to his deployment. Noting a strange look that came over him, Close's son asked his father what was wrong.
I said, "Well, you know, I used to work my butt off loading thousands and thousands of tons of munitions, trying to take this city off the map, and here I am spending a couple nights here." I said, "That's ironic."
Close went to sites that brought up a lot of emotions. Da Nang, the Hanoi Hilton, the shelters where he himself had loaded bombs and chemical agents onto planes that are now used to store buses. During the trip, he even spoke with older men like himself who had once fought for the Viet Cong.
As I told them, I said, "You know, you were doing your job and I was doing my job." I realized, you know, we were trying to kill each other.
Of the trip, Close takes a long pause and with a heavy sigh says it was okay. At the end of the interview, he's asked what message he has for future generations. His answer comes in two parts.
The first one being that the war that I dealt with didn't accomplish a whole lot, in my opinion. I know that there are a lot of Vietnam vets that are contrary to that feeling. But going back, you know, the whole country is communist, so we didn't stop that. I lost a lot of good friends over there in It just didn't gain anything. You don't take out 59,000 lives, and they have basically nothing to show for it. I know that's pretty tough talk, but it's sad. It's really sad.
Second answer is that young people should live each day to the fullest. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
For more about Alaskans who served in Vietnam, you can find videos and more stories at alaskapublic.org/Vietnam.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact us to learn more.
Many Alaska communities have housing shortages, which makes it hard to attract people to their communities. In Nikolai, the school decided to solve the problem while teaching students some important life lessons. Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk reporter Ann Hillman has more.
The school in Nikolai, until recently, had a problem. There was nowhere for the high school teacher to live.
And the last 2 years, our high school teacher has actually had to live in the school in a teeny tiny little room that contains a bunk bed and a dresser and a desk, and there's nothing else.
That's Principal Tara Wiggins. Did having just a little teeny tiny room make it harder to recruit a teacher?
Yes, I've been told that several of the teachers were interested and then didn't come because they had families and didn't want to stay in the school.
Housing in Nikolai, a village of about 100 people on the South Fork of the Kuskokwim River, is scarce everywhere. It's expensive and difficult to get building supplies there. But the school district had another problem, too. They needed more classes to help their students develop real-world skills for getting jobs later in life. So, the solution? Have the kids build the house with professional supervision during a special summer program.
So we layered plastic down here. We got foam boards on the floor, on this floor right here, and against the wall.
Student Thomas Aury shows off the work they accomplished during the first few weeks of the class in late June. The exterior walls were up and the roof was on. The house was connected to the septic system. But he says the project wasn't as straightforward as he hoped, even though they are building it from a kit that theoretically comes with everything they need.
You get the blueprints and then you get all the supplies, but they sent us one house and they sent us another thing of blueprints.
And it wasn't like the students and their instructors could just walk to the store and get the correct plans. Everything was shipped in from hundreds of miles away in Anchorage. They didn't have all the supplies yet either. The windows had to be brought upriver from 6 hours away, and that delay meant they couldn't finish the siding. They were running out of options for things to do, and kids couldn't just go home and come back later. They came from schools across the region and two different school districts and were living near the job site in the main school building. But learning problem solving and improvising are part of the job, says student Harlan Standish.
You're constantly using your reasoning skills. You know, you're not just learning how to put a building together. You're learning how to kind of think ahead or think about different ways of doing things. Like if you make a mistake on a wall or something and you got to fix it, you got to kind of think about how you can fix it without taking it all apart.
Though Standish is enjoying learning new skills, the whole process isn't exactly fun when it involves precarious balancing acts.
I hate putting in the blocking between the rafters, yeah.
Why?
Because you have to stand up on this little edge right here.
Oh.
You have to stand up on that little edge and try to use a nail gun to put them all in without falling over the side.
Harlan is afraid of heights, and the drop below the window is pretty long.
So how come you got stuck doing a job that you're terrified of?
Oh, because it's on a job site. You just gotta, you know, buckle up and do the job.
They've matured in a lot of ways.
That's their teacher, Troy Tubbs. He says just over the first month of the two-month summer program, the high school students felt the effects of being on a real job site and far from their homes.
For most of them, I think they've never been away from home, especially not for this long of a period. And so there was a little bit of an adjustment there where they had to get used to living with roommates, finding out how to manage their own time, being responsible for getting up on time, getting their meals squared away, and getting out there to the job site when they're supposed to be.
They're also getting high school and college credit for the class and getting paid. Iditarod Area School District Superintendent Connie Newman says they didn't save any money by building the new school housing with students, though the project allowed them to use funds for career and technical classes for two purposes. And because of delays with supplies, the house eventually had to be finished by professionals at the beginning of the school year, more than a month behind schedule. But The project was successful enough that they plan on holding a similar class to build school housing in Grayling next summer. The district may also partner with the tribe in Nikolai to build housing for elders. I'm Ann Hellman with Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk.
If you'd like to know more about community solutions, subscribe to the Solutions Desk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also visit alaskapublic.org/solutions. Sometimes companies or agencies lose their equipment at sea, and rather than leave an expensive investment behind on the ocean floor, they send in the troops. In this case, the troops is one Kodiak local. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
ROVs, or remotely operated underwater vehicles, come in various forms.
There's big expensive ones costing millions of dollars in the oil industry that have lots of capabilities. There's also inspection class ROVs.
Mark Blakesley says he's got several of those. Blakesley contracts with different companies to retrieve their gear, things like acoustic Doppler current profilers, which measure water speed and direction, and a lot of other high-tech instruments. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration most recently hired Blakesley to rescue a data collecting tool they had dropped in the waters of Barrow Canyon.
They were towing a winged object, sort of a cage with wings on it, and they could command it to go up or down in the water column and through this cable, tow cable, but the cable broke and they dropped it in 500 feet of water.
He says they went out on an oil response boat and tracked the machine by following its cable. The mission wasn't without complications, including bad weather and technical difficulties.
The first day we got down and I lost a thruster, I saw a small white flash of death, but it was just a death of a thruster, so that was disappointing, but I had enough maneuverability to go around in big circles.
It took a few days, but Blakesley says on the third try, the lost object popped up on sonar and they pulled it aboard. Blakesley says he'd like to expand into tourism with his ROVs. He wants to take people out and give them a look under the ocean surface. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Ann Hillman in Nikolai, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.